Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori, and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/JJ. That's Vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Welcome to The Old Men of the Three with J.J. Redick and Tommy Alter, presented by Cash App and brought to you by 342 Productions. This is episode 127, DeMar DeRozan. Tommy, we had DeMar on in the fall of 2020 over Zoom. It still to this day is one of my favorite episodes. I put a little pressure on him to deliver in his second appearance on the show, which we did in person in L.A. at the end of August, and he delivered again. Just a phenomenally intelligent, thoughtful human being, and of course, an incredible basketball player.
DeMar, we said this to him, I think on the show and off the show. DeMar is a spectacular podcast guest because without trying, he tells great stories. He just like naturally tells great stories.
He does. And we get into a lot of stuff sort of post San Antonio. There is some San Antonio stuff in there. But a lot of, you know, his free agency getting to the Chicago Bulls, that magical personal season that he had last year when he was all NBA and all-star and in the conversation for much of the season in terms of being an MVP. And the Bulls are interesting, man. You know, with Lonzo not cleared yet and he's dealing with this knee injury long-term, you know, he's such an important piece for them. And then, of course, Patrick Williams, you know, what kind of bounce back does he have? What kind of growth does he show? He's a key piece moving forward for them at that wing position and his versatility, being able to guard multiple positions. So a lot of interesting stuff happening in Chicago. Tommy, we are recording this on Media Day, on NBA Media Day. So there may be some stuff that happens today. I know our guy Jimmy Butler debuted his beautiful locks, beautiful hair. And a clean shave. But there may be some stuff that happens later today or at some point today that we're just, it's not in the pod, and we'll try to touch on that next week.
Let's get a review of that haircut. You've seen Jimmy a lot this summer, and this is your first time seeing that cut. So what do you think?
Oh, it's great. It's great. I mean, Jimmy's going to be Jimmy. We always appreciate Jimmy's personality. A couple of housekeeping notes I want to mention before we get to DeMar's episode. The first thing is we are going to be debuting a newsletter. It's going to be out next week. Our first newsletter will be out next week. We'll have a lot of information about how to subscribe to that on social media. To be very clear, it is a free newsletter. There's going to be NBA stuff. There's going to be food stuff, wine stuff. Our guy Jason is going to put out some funny stuff. It'll have a little mix of everything. And we want your feedback. We want your interaction with the newsletter. And lastly, Tommy, I know you know this. I know our team knows this. But the Post reported today, the New York Post reported today that I signed a 3-year extension with ESPN. And I just wanted to confirm that. Yeah. You know, I will be back at ESPN. It'll be a heavy dose of calling games and First Take with our guy, Stephen A.
Champagne. We're popping the champagne virtually. We'll do it in person later today.
Hopefully we'll do it later today. All right, let's get to this awesome episode with Chicago Bull DeMar DeRozan. All right, let's welcome in DeMar. DeMar, thank you so much for joining us. You know, people ask me all the time that are maybe early listeners of the pod or, and have done a bunch of, listened to a bunch of episodes or maybe are just getting into the pod. I was like, which episode should I listen to? You know, what are your favorite episodes? And honest to goodness, this is your second time on the show. Mm-hmm. Your first appearance, which was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Over Zoom too, is still one of, if not my favorite, one of my all-time favorite episodes we've ever done.
Really? I mean, that means a lot. And that's why I was so excited to come back and do it, because when we did it over Zoom. Then watching all the guys that went on that had the chance to go in person, I was like, shit, I can't wait to go in there. Just do it in person. You know what I mean? It'd be a lot better. But man, that means a lot for real.
Yeah, I mean, I said this, I think, in the intro of the episode, but you're not much of a talker on the court, and we never played together. And I went into that episode not really knowing what to expect. And you were as honest and as candid and as insightful as anyone that we've had on the show. So the bar is set pretty fucking high here.
I see.
You and LeBron recently played in the Drew League. And, you know, Jamal Crawford, our buddy, just had a bunch of guys go up there in Seattle for the crossover pro-am. And I feel like there's this resurgence in NBA players playing in these pro-ams and playing in these summer leagues that we probably haven't seen in 10 years or so.
For sure.
And some of that, of course, was COVID knocking out two summers where we could actually participate in that. But like, what's the importance of that, do you think, to communities, to fans, to basketball junkies?
For me, it's everything, because I remember being that childhood kid and, you know, I remember my dad used to take me to the Long Beach Pyramid and watch all the older guys play. Whatever type of league that was going on in the summertime, that was just exciting for me, you know, as a kid. So to see NBA players come back and play in a community where, you know, for free, to me it was a major thing that I just wanted to get back to. Like you said, for 2 years, you know, the summertime was just, it was awful. It was no entertainment, was nothing going on. So this year I just try to make it more of a conscious effort for myself just to go back and compete and play in it, you know, for the community more than anything, because I know being that kid in the crowd, how much that mean to be up close and see NBA players, you know, and it means so much and it gives so much inspiration. So for me, I was just trying to get back to that element. And with that, you know, we got social media now, me planning it, Brian hit me one day, was like, yo, I'm gonna come play with you next weekend. So I'm like, oh shit, this is a hell of an opportunity just for the city alone. You know, in Los Angeles, it's been, you know, a down couple years as far as, you know, the culture of sports, you know, losing one of the greatest, Kobe, you know, losing Nipsey Hussle, people that staples that bring a certain type of inspiration to the city, you know, dealing with those tragedies over the last few years, you know, you wanted some type of excitement. So for Brian to come do that and you see the outcome that it brought, it was amazing.
I was going to ask about Drew in particular in the city of Compton. And just what it means for that community. Obviously, you know that well, but just, I think even for some of our listeners, they maybe have seen clips of it, but they don't know that much about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's embedded it from the 70s and the 80s, like Byron Scott used to play in it. Those guys back in the Laker days in the 80s, they used to go compete and it was a middle school then where, you know, you probably get 150 people in this hot, sweaty-ass gym competing, working on a game. And it started from then, and it started to grow. And I had the opportunity to play in this small, sweaty-ass gym when I was 14 years old against grown men, pushing me against the wall, knocking me down, talking trash to me. And it was always a part of the culture because it always brought out that family environment type of feel. The community had come out. It was always something you look forward to during a weekend. You know, you see guys, whether it was overseas, older players, pros, ex-pros, coming out there and compete. And it meant everything to the community. So for me to be able to compete in it, it means so much. And that's why I think I take it so serious every summer, just to always make it an obligation to go back and play, because, you know, it's been embedded way before I was born. I remember when my dad used to take me, I see he standing on the side and they telling old basketball stories on the side. Just that whole sports feel with the game is built off. It was that every weekend.
I think it shouldn't be understated, the significance of having guys like you, LeBron, obviously Kobe played in as well, Kevin Durant doing the Rucker thing like 10 years ago, Chet Holmgren now, Paolo Banchero, those guys playing in these things, like high level, all-star level. Of course, LeBron, one of the greatest of all time, like participating in this. And you mentioned competition. I think a lot of people maybe don't know this, but you and LeBron combined for 72 points and you almost took an L.
Yeah, we almost lost. And even if you watch the game, it was like, I don't care if these guys not pros, they competing. Like, this is probably the biggest game of their life. So you're going to get their best effort. And that's what made the game so great when he came to play, because it was a real game. Even me and Brian was joking during the game, like shit, this feel like this 30 games into an NBA season, you know, and that's what you want. You want to go out there and compete. I felt like it wouldn't have been fun if we just went out there and won by 30, 40 points. We got their best effort. You know, I got into it with one of the players, and that's what it's all about. You know, just to go out there and compete. And that's what made it so much fun and made it such a legendary day that day, because it did come down to the wire.
Have you ever done Rucker, like Berry Farms, like any of the East Coast ones?
I did Rucker when I was in high school. Never got a chance to do Berry Farms. But it was crazy, even you asking that. It was a conversation I had with DeJounte Murray earlier in the summer after me and Bron played in the Drew. And it was about us trying to get back in the element of having guys go out and play at these, you know, whether if it's in Miami, you see guys now playing in Miami, you see Donovan Mitchell, you see, you know, Bam, you see, you know, obviously Seattle, but it's so many leagues around the world that have so much competition. If guys just go out there and play, that's how I fell in love with the game, is watching all these leagues outside. Even me, we didn't have the opportunity to have the outside parks like the East Coast do. So for me, I always paid attention to it and always wanted to be a part of it, you know, so much, to bring that passion and love for the game back and to see so many guys jumping back into it, man, it means a lot.
You know, it's wild for me. I was thinking about this recently, because when I was a pro, you're right, when growing up, it was pickup games and it was summer league and it was AAU. That was like our bridge to the love of the game and the obsession of the game. It wasn't just going outside and shooting. When I got to the league, I didn't play any pickup, and guys would come back in September, you know, and they'd start playing pickup in the gym. I remember you and I went against each other my first year in LA. That was like the bare minimum. I might be show up for 2 days and do that. But I was not a pickup guy. I was like a routine guy. I wanted my time in the gym. I wanted my 6 days. And recently, I went to the park with my soon-to-be 8-year-old in Sag Harbor, and I got challenged to a 2-on-2 game by two middle schoolers. Yeah. And I was in golf clothes and flip-flops and a backwards cap and sunglasses. And I dominated them. Yeah. They had no idea who I was. Yeah. I dominated these kids.
We're happy for
you. And won. But afterwards, I was like, fuck, that was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun to play pickup. And so now, this summer specifically, like watching you guys play in these summer leagues, I'm like, man, I should have done that more. All right, it was a golden opportunity that I missed. Because there is something special just about, like, obviously playing in front of people, but like, there's an element of giving back. There's an element of just joy, less pressure. You know, there's not that pressure that you get from 82 games and playoffs in the NBA.
For sure. And that's the beauty of it, honestly. I find so much enjoyment. You know, sometimes I find myself getting tech knowing they can't take my money. You know, it'd be small shit like that. But just, you know, you feel like a kid all over again. You know, you take the whole, you know, dealing with the whole political side of, you know, what comes with our occupation, playing in league so much. You just go out there and just play, you know, and that's the element of it that, you know, you yearn to have, because you know how we play so many games during the NBA season. Emotionally, you so up and down. You got to get yourself up for this day, traveling. You got to work. There's so much that goes into it when it's just pick up to where it's like, I'm going to just go out here and play, you know, and that's the beauty about it. And even for me, when I go back and play, me being from LA, when I play against guys that, you know, I grew up, I probably haven't seen in 10, 15 years, you know, and being able to compete against them and hear old stories about how we used to compete back in high school or small things like that. It's kind of like a reunion of basketball competition for me. And that's what I always look forward to. And that's what makes it fun.
I want to be clear on this. I'm going to look in the camera when I say this. It is a joy to play in the NBA. But to your point, it often feels like a job.
For sure.
And that's, I think, where that joy of just pure basketball and hooping really comes in pickup games. Tommy, have you ever seen DeMar's high school mixtapes?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched it before the last pod.
Okay. It's the Ball is Life one is the one that pops up on Twitter or IG every, you know, few months. And I rewatched it for like the 10th time this morning. And, you know, there was like a rawness to your game. Athleticism and all that. And, you know, when you first came in the league, you were in the dunk contest. And so you were more known as an athlete.
For sure. Yeah.
And I'm curious about your sort of maturity as a player, your growth as a player, and how you sort of hone your skills. Like, what does an off season look like for you? How did you develop your shot, your ball handling, all your passing, all these things that make you so good now?
Me being the ultimate fan of the game. Like, when you talk about a fan of the game, like, I'm an ultimate just sports head. From, you know, I go back at times, I find myself looking at guys like, let me see who was the top five scorers in the 70s or the 80s. And really wonder and see how they used to get a shot off. And I may take one move from them. It may be something as simple as a 2-dribble pull-up. And I try to master the small things that kind of get overlooked. And I always been that way, probably after my second, third year in the game, in the lead. And, you know, a lot of veteran guys that, you know, that I look up to gave me a lot of game. You know, Corey Maggette, I learned a lot from Corey. I used to work out with Corey a lot my first couple years in the league. He taught me the element and the importance of being able to get fouled, free throws. You know, he told me about that every single day. And that was the last thing that was on my mind. Why are you just so worried about free throws? But you remember the Corey Maggette cut, how he used to go downhill, how he get to the free throw line. And it'd be small things like that I try to implement in my game. And it used to be conversation I had with Sam Cassell about post-ups, shooting over the left shoulder and getting your shot off. And it's just, I always nitpick from conversation from a lot of guys that's not, you know, the prime guys that everybody look towards. And, you know, that's just me being a junkie and always just trying to study and understand ways to be able to be special. Like, one of my favorite players, I always used to like to watch how he got guys involved from passing to scoring was Andre Miller. He wasn't fast. He wasn't the most athletic, but he got whatever he needed done on the court. And that's just me just being a fan, honestly. And I just always try to find different ways, different people where I can steal something from and learn and try to keep getting better.
We talk about footwork with a lot of guys in the show, but I think you're objectively up there, you know, for best footwork in the league. Is there somebody you learned that from in particular, or is that just a combination of everything?
Oh, that was Kobe. The footwork element, that was countless times of getting cussed out by Kobe. about trying to do something the right way. So all that came from him, just his analogies and his metaphors, where he used to say certain things to me I didn't understand probably till a year later after he told me something. He spoke in codes, and it was on you to figure it out. But I want to say 80% of that came from him. You know, he was one of the first ones that made me start paying attention to fucking soccer. Like, look how they run, how they this, how they, you know what I mean? It's like, I've never played soccer. Just watch it, you know? And over time, you start to understand a lot of stuff he talked about. And, you know, so from the footwork aspect, I got the majority of that from Kobe.
It's remarkable, his influence on our generation of player, Do you think at all about the influence that you have on younger players and young, the younger generation?
I don't, but when...
But hold on. You will in like 2 years. I wasn't thinking about it. And then you get to a certain point in your career and you're like, oh, this is actually important.
And that's the scary thing, because I have certain moments here and there where the young guys that make me feel like, shit, am I that, I'm that old? Like,
but you've went in recently?
Yeah.
In terms of play or cultural references or how they speak in the locker room?
Yes. Just everything on down the line to where certain things would be asked and it's like, damn, I am going into my 14th year, so I see why you're looking at it from that perspective. When I'm just, you know, I'm still trying to get better as it go, but certain guys that ask how I do, you know, certain things or how I be able to get my shot off in the post or create separation or certain things I could tell that they paying attention to and they want to learn from. And I just have to realize, like, I have been doing this a long time instead of feeling like, oh, we in this together. It's like, I have been doing it a long time.
Yeah. I want to go back, and you were on Draymond's show recently, and you talked about a little bit about your free agency in the summer of 2021, but I want to go back and ask you some questions about that. And first, I want to say that Tommy was right. Every time this comes up, I have to admit when I'm wrong. Tommy was right. It's a great signing. Lonzo was a great signing.
Well, I was in on the Bulls.
No, I seen it.
I was in on the Bulls from the jump.
I seen it. Yeah, I seen it.
I was wrong. My questions were just like about fit, with Zach and stuff like that. It was not about you as a player, nor about the Bulls organization.
I was
proven wrong. But on Draymond's show, you talked a little bit about the Laker thing, and I want to ask about that. But you actually said something about like a minimum, like you getting the vet minimum. Was that actually a real thing? Like, were teams actually bringing you offers?
Someone offered that. Yes. I'm not going to say who. Someone did offer that. And it was another team that say they wouldn't even come to me with that and disrespect me in any type of way of offering that. But that's all they had. But yeah, that was a thing.
So how was the Lakers thing even remotely close?
Yeah, it was. It was, to my knowledge, I thought it was a done deal. To my knowledge, like I remember I took a trip to Mexico just to get away because I could just feel it anticipation of everything coming, you know, to play. So I was like, I'm gonna get away for a couple days, take my mind off it, and by the time I come home, be free agency. Hey. Signing with the Lakers. I'm asleep one morning in Mexico. I get a call from Cal Lowry, and he said, they just made the trade for Russ. What's going on? I thought the deal was done for you to go to the Lakers. And I was like, I'm confused that I'm looking at my phone like, damn, that did happen. Well, I guess that's out the window. Like, you know what I mean? Because in my mind, that was the only option for me to go to. Like, I was sold on that done deal. I didn't even entertain anything else because I'm letting this situation work itself out. So when I seen the trade happen, I knew it was no way for me to go to the Lakers at this point. So now it was a scramble mode. Like, damn, okay, what's...
Maybe I do take the vet minimum.
Yeah, like what's next? Because, you know, everything else is, you know, all my other options I would have, you know, entertained, you know, I pushed it to the side because, you know, I was hell bent on playing for the Lakers. So when that fell through, the next couple of days after that, I was just trying to figure out what was my next move and what was the right move too, especially you got a couple teams offering, all right, the minimum.
Mid-level. I'm sure teams call that the mid-level, maybe.
Yeah, mid-level. So it was like, now it's confusing. You know, now it takes such a huge turn with that one trade of me figuring out what's next. You know, so it was definitely a tough moment because in my mind, I was going to be a Laker.
When the Bulls thing did sort of materialize, was there a sense of relief? Like, okay, I got a great contract and I can move on. Was there something specific about the Bulls that made it attractive, or was this like a last ditch effort? I mean, you can be honest.
No, it wasn't last ditch effort. You know, I think I was so sold on wanting to go home. Like, it just overweighed everything else. Because Chicago was definitely in my top three, no question. But the only concern I had at the time was a point guard. You know, they didn't have a point guard. And I wasn't sure what Zach was going to do. Like, you know, Zach was still up in the air if he wanted to be there or what. And I remember having to call Zach while he was in the Olympics, ask him like, yo, is you going to stay? Because if not, I'm not even going to entertain this, because I don't want to go there and not, you know, play with you. My whole reason in coming is because I want to play with you. So once he told me that, then I think the next day they signed Zoe. And I was all in after that.
Is there a part of you, you know, we talk about motivation with different guys throughout different points of their career a lot on the show. Is there a part of you, maybe not even the Lakers thing, but just that specific offer of somebody offering you the vet minimum with everything you've accomplished in your career?
For sure.
Where you're just like, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my career.
Oh, yeah. It pissed me off. It pissed me off. And I try to make it evident, especially when I play certain teams.
So we just got to look at the
game. I'm gonna go to basketball reference. I'm going to go to the game logs.
It's easy to tell. It's easy to tell because I made it a personal vendetta against a handful of teams for sure. So it's obvious, but yeah, it definitely was that. It was a great motivational effort that I took from it.
I think the word you used on Draymond's show is vengeance.
Yes.
That you were, that means you're out for blood.
Yeah, that's, that. Listen, only thing when going into the season, the only quote, the quote I kept reading every single day was a quote from Godfather. Revenge is best served cold. And I stuck with that. That was my whole mentality every time I would open play.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
If you're looking for well-crafted clothes and laid-back vibes, then you need to check out the Movement Collection from Faherty. The playoffs are coming up, which means I need to look sharp at games, so I've got the Movement dress shirt ready to rock. This thing looks really great, but it's the comfort that does it for me. It's extremely soft and breathable. Plus, it has a longer length, so you can tuck it in, and a true spread collar, so you can wear it with a tie. I just love it. For listeners of the show, Faherty Brand is offering 20% off your first order when you enter the promo code OM3 at checkout. Go to fahertybrand.com/JJ and check them out. That's FAHERTY.com/JJ for 20% off your first order with code OM3.
On a personal level, because obviously, and we'll touch on this in a second, but on a personal level, the Bulls obviously dealt with injuries, and after a hot start, you guys sort of fizzled off because of those injuries and the lack of continuity. But on a personal level, how would you describe your season? Like, if you had to use a word or two to describe your season?
Eye-opening for me. Because I'm not sure. It's probably the second time I talk about it. But for 3 years, I doubted myself playing in San Antonio. I questioned myself if I would ever be the player I felt like I was when I was in Toronto. Not to take away nothing from San Antonio. San Antonio and Pop taught me so much, but the way everything just transitioned unexpectedly for me, I lost a sense of confidence that I carried. And I was fighting and searching for that for so long in San Antonio of, damn, am I going to be back to that? On top of hearing the narrative of, you know, not being paid attention to. They use the age thing so frequent now. You can be 29 and say you're getting old. But at the time, just paying attention is so much that you hear, never be the same player, not this, 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 this. Once you hear so much of that shit, you will have days here and there where you will believe it. You know what I mean? And I fell victim to that a lot during my 3 year in San Antonio. So for me to work my ass off and go through everything I went through that the summer of free agency and everything, it was definitely eye-opening, because that's all I wanted to do was to get back to feel like that person that played this past season.
This was probably in January. It might have been in February when you were going through your unbelievable stretch there, but I think I was on NBA Today, and I kind of said your time in San Antonio was like basketball purgatory for you. And I don't mean that as a knock on San Antonio, because I mean more mean it about just the relevance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, my last year in Orlando, they had traded Dwight and we sucked, and they were trying to get a high draft pick, and I just felt irrelevant.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, if I wasn't competing and trying to win a championship, like it just didn't feel right to me. And that was one of the things I said to Doc when he recruited me in free agency. I was like, I just want to get back to on a team that's relevant. And some of it is San Antonio is a small market. You guys weren't like contenders when you were there. Did you feel that?
Yeah, I felt that. I felt like I was wiped off off the map.
You weren't part of the conversation.
Yeah, at all. You know, and that took a toll, especially for something, you know, every single year going, you know, to the conference finals, semi-conference finals, competing, winning 50 plus games, to all of a sudden you don't exist. And it was like, damn, what's this? Hey, I'm here. Like, yeah, that's what I felt like, you know. And granted, I had great games. I developed in a lot of great ways as a basketball player, but in the same token, you know, I just felt non-existent, you know, for those years. And, you know, wasn't like we was on TV, we wouldn't compete. You know, it was so much to it that was a struggle. Yeah, so you definitely hit it on the nose. It's just, you know, I just felt like I was irrelevant.
Yeah. It's one of the many times this year that a fan base has had a problem with something I've said. San Antonio fans, you know, think I'm talking shit about them. Early in the season, I did countdown one time, and we were talking about Eastern Conference contenders, and I was like, look, I don't think the Bulls are... You guys were in first place, granted. You guys were in first place.
JJ had a lot to say.
But yeah, I said, I don't think the Bulls are in the same conversation you know, the Nets I didn't even say Boston, because they were like fucking under 500 at the time. And Bulls fans hated me. Bucks fans hate me. It's part of my new gig.
Yeah.
But I do mean that it's not a knock on San Antonio or the Spurs. Of course, they're one of the greatest organizations in our league. But it's just more about that relevance. And so to go through that, and you did get better, by the way.
Yeah.
You did get better. You said you doubted yourself, but you got better in those years. You're a much better playmaker. To go through that and then to have the free agency experience that you have now, that you had last year, I mean, and then to be second team all NBA and basically have a career year.
Yeah.
As you're reflecting this summer, like what is your thought process?
Shit. What's crazy is even everything I put myself through physically to prepare for this past season, it's like I doubled down this time around this summer of just knowing that I can with the hard work, knowing what to do with having a blueprint of understanding what you're working with, and being in a situation, you know, where you happy again to hoop, you know, and with all those elements, it's finally a clear, you know, sight for me to move forward, to continue to keep getting better, not just for myself, but as a leader as well, to, you know, make that next step. As a leader to help my team move forward, you know, because last year it was the success we had, that was a first for a lot of guys on the team. You know, it was a lot. And it was a lot of moments where, you know, I realized like, you know, we're not going to be able to sustain this. We're going to hit a wall at some point. And how long will that wall knock us down? You know, I knew it was coming. So when it hit, you know, it was one of those moments to where we just didn't have enough time to figure it out, and dealing with injuries and not having Zoe, Zach in and out the lineup. You know, it was tough. It was tough on us because we definitely had a lot of young guys that hadn't experienced or understood what it took to really compete at a high level.
You had a bunch of insane stretches, including the whole month of February. And then also I want to talk about those two buzzer beaters back to back. But did you have a favorite, week or two stretch of the season where you were just like, this is the one looking back was sort of the pinnacle of the year?
Whenever I went on that stretch, everybody was beating Wilt. I think leading up to me doing that, I think I had a game where I missed like 6-7 free throws in a game. I stayed afterwards. I shot after everybody left the arena. I shot afterwards, and I remember being pissed off that I missed 6 free throws in a game. I was mad for 2 days straight. And before I went on that run, me missing those free throws played a part in it, because it was something that just flicked for me where, like, I just felt like, I'm not falling victim to me missing free throws. I took it personal, like a personal challenge amongst myself. Then I went on that stretch of, I couldn't believe it, be honest with you. But
this is the 30-point game stretch?
Yeah.
I think you had 10 in a row, 8 of them over 50%, right?
Yeah. And it was, you know, you look up when you get 8, 9, it's like, all right, I'm tired of this record because they just waiting for me to keep going, you know, keep going. But I want to say that stretch, because before that I had a game where I just was, I think it was like 6 for 12 from the free throw line, and I was upset. I was pissed off, shot afterwards, and I went on that stretch after that.
The game winner, the first game winner, by the way, the first player in NBA history to hit buzzer beaters on back-to-back days, but game-winning buzzer beaters. The first one against Indiana. You actually didn't have a great game that day. You were 8 for 24.
It was terrible. Yeah.
The confidence to shoot a one-legged three at the buzzer. It's not like you had to shoot a one-legged three.
I had the ball
with like 5 or 6 seconds.
I'm gonna tell you.
You
why.
Lined up a one-legged Listen, three.
I'm gonna tell you why. Because you're right. I remember that game. That game was a fucking struggle. We fought it out. I had a bad shoot night. I remember I couldn't make nothing. And I made a big play before that, got a deflection. And when I was coming off the screen, I got to give Craig a lot of credit. He's one of the best. I give him top 2 players in the league that defends me the best.
Torrey Craig.
I give him that. Like, I never told him this, so I'm pretty sure you're going to see this shit. But I give him credit. And that night I was struggling and I was tired. And I remember coming down, I was trying to get the switch with Sabonis. But he stayed and he got back to Vooch, and Craig stayed in front of me. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm not going to make it to the rim how tired I am if I try to shoot a fadeaway of 2 feet. And the way he was contesting me all night, he was going to block it. So in my mind, I crossed. And I know he not going to expect me to shoot off one leg. And I went off one leg just to be able to get the shot off. Because if I shot it off 2 feet, fade away, he would have blocked it. No question, he would have blocked it. So that's why I shot the one leg. Because I knew I could get it off quicker and I could get it to the rim and give it a chance.
Unexpected. Is that a shot you practice?
No, I never practiced that. I'd be lying to you and tell you I practiced that. I just wanted to get the shot off.
This is the breakdowns that I love, though, because there's... Like, for a professional athlete, there's a level of confidence and belief in self that you have to have. And on an off shooting night, you're being guarded by one of the two guys that you feel like guards you the best in the league, gives you the most problem. And there's less than 5 seconds. You've got like a split second decision. You're trying to create this switch with Sabonis. It doesn't happen. the sort of mental wherewithal to sort of process all that in real time. And then again, the confidence to then take that shot. That to me is what I find remarkable. The most remarkable about that. And the fact that you never practiced the shot.
Yeah. I mean, some nights it go like that, but that was definitely one of those nights that I just wanted to give myself a chance with it getting to the rim. And that was the only way I could get the shot off, especially how I felt physically. That was my only option.
Is that why you think that confidence is why you're so good in the last minute of games?
Yeah, and it was crazy. I had a conversation one day with my therapist, and we came to the conclusion I'm a thrill junkie. Right? And so I'm telling you the truth. So with that being said, it's me understanding, like, the fourth quarter, you've seen guys, fourth quarter, they don't want to touch the ball. They don't want to take a shot. They don't want to shoot the free throw. They don't want to get fouled or go to the free throw line. They just don't want that pressure on them. Fourth quarter, I want everything, the good, the bad, the ugly. I want everything that comes with it, because to me, that's the most exciting time of the game, to make the right play, get a bucket on the road, at home. I want all the pressure that come with that. And I thrive in it so much, because to me, that's where I'm at my most calmest emotionally and mentally, to be able to focus in when, you know, everybody else tired. I heard a quote. I pay attention to, like, small shit like this. Like, I'm a big boxing fan. And I remember having a conversation with Floyd, and Floyd told me the way he beat up a lot of his opponents is later in the round, he paid attention to their breathing. So when the breathing get heavier, he know that's the time to turn it up on them, what he could attack, and he attack them and slowly beat them up after that. So in the fourth quarter, I know this person tired. I hear it. I just seen you call for a sub. I know your subbing patterns. I know, you know, I pay attention to small things. So I know by this time, 7 minutes in the game, you've been chasing me around. You've been chasing Zach around. I know you exhausted. So I'm about to muster up this side of energy that I got and just attack it. And that's how I always approach the fourth quarter. And I just try to lock in mentally more than ever. But from a conditioning standpoint, once I see you on your knees, once I see you tired in any type of way, I'm going to attack it. So,
you know what I realized? I just realized we've been talking for a little over 35 minutes now. I realized that you're a sicko, that you're a true sicko.
Yeah. Right.
And I mean that as a compliment.
Thank you.
Not many players are, but fuck, dude, you're a sicko. The second game winner against the Wizards. What do you remember about that in the moment? Because that was a different shot.
Yeah, that was
corner. It was off an inbounds. It was multiple shot fakes. Like, it was a different shot.
That was one. In the fourth quarter, I remember hitting a couple shots. But I give you the whole breakdown. I remember the play was actually for Zach, for me to curl off first, Zach to go underneath the rim, come back off with a pin down, catch the ball at the top of the key for a three. But they switched out, and I remember if you listen to the video again, you can hear me make a noise to Kobe White. It's a noise I always make in a game or in practice. It's like a subtle noise that I make. And I made it to Kobe, and he knew I was open. So when I made the noise, I knew one of them was going to jump. I said, I'm going to get to my spot. Somebody going to jump. Not necessarily for me to draw a foul, but just to get any type of separation that I needed. So as soon as I went to the corner, I knew I was going to shoot the three. If somebody jump up in the air, I'm going to get a clean look at this. And then both of them jumped. Bill jumped late. And as soon as I seen the hoop, I just said, give it a chance. And it went in. For a second, I couldn't believe it, because I was hoping my toe wasn't on the line. But it was one of those moments, once I hit it, I kind of was stuck for a second, like, all right, did I get off in time? All right, ref holding up, it was three. all right, let's get the fuck out of here before they start some reviewing and all this. So that was a special game too, because it was obviously was on a back to back, and my thought process in that was I knew somebody was going to jump, and I just needed that for the separation. I needed to get the shot off.
I'm curious about when you're talking about listening to guys breathing and then you talking about sickos. We talk about this with CP a lot. Who else in the league are you like? Who else is like when you're playing them, it's like, okay, I know I have in the last minute, but I know they do too. And so it's almost like it's like a battle royale more than anything.
I mean, it's a lot of guys. I mean, I think it's evident who the guys are. You know, CP is definitely one of them, master manipulator when it comes to in-game tactics.
It's a gentle way of saying something about Chris.
Yeah.
are there guys that, so obviously there's the, like, take the sort of obvious ones out of it. Are there people that would maybe aren't, you know, all-stars or on the Olympics?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Who might surprise you?
That's a good question. Wow, that's a good, great question. It was a lot of the older guys that was like that. I'm glad I had the pleasure to play against the older generation, because a lot of those tactics I got that from, you know, rather if it was KG talking to himself and you see the player next to him, like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you know, and it's just intimidating because what he's saying is crazy, but now you're intimidated. You know what I mean? It's like, I learned a lot of that from the older guys, rather if it was Kobe, to where, you know, if he knows somebody's finger was sprained, he gonna file the shit out you just to make that finger hurt worse, you know? So I got a lot of that from the older guys. You know, the younger generation, I don't think they pay attention to it that much.
I bring this up on the show all the time. The last time you came on, you talked about when you guys played, when you were in Toronto and you played the Cavs and Bron was calling out your plays.
Yeah.
And how you were basically just like, that's how I know.
Yeah.
Like, he's different. Have you had anything, not even just necessarily with him, but experiences like that recently where you're like, okay, this dude is just like.
It comes from all the older guys. Like, you know, Rondo was one. He'd yell out a whole play. If you call a play, Rondo gonna know the exact play you're gonna run. That's like the older guys. You know what I mean? You'd be surprised. It's not many. What I'd be surprised about, probably the last probably 5-6 years since I've been in the league, it's not even a lot of guys who watch basketball. Mm. You know what I mean? I think that's one thing that isn't talked about a lot. It's a lot of guys that don't watch basketball. And I always take that personal, because I will watch every single game. I need to watch every single game. I need to know who did what, how. All right, how the team shoot, how many turnovers, like everything. Most of these guys don't play. They will play video games. They will go home and play video games. I remember one of my coaches, Dwayne Casey. we had film one day. We was playing Boston Celtics, and he asked one of the players, because the night before Boston had played too. And Dwayne Casey asked one of the players, what color jersey did Boston wear last night? And the player didn't know. He didn't know. And it was like, what? You know what I mean? So you'd be surprised. It's more players in our league who don't watch basketball.
Typical shoot around walkthrough. And by the way, sometimes even in the playoffs, you go through, I don't know, depending on the coach. With Stan, we went through 30 plays. But typically, you go through 5 to 10 plays, and you get asked questions about the coverages, what we're supposed to do. And on any given team, there might be like 3 guys that know what the fuck is going on in a shoot-around.
You'd be surprised. I'm telling you.
It's like, sometimes I've been on teams where like we would do scouting report. So the guards would go with one group, bigs would go with another group, you know, another coach. The coach would start the film. All right, we got DeMar DeRozan tonight. What do we need to know about DeMar? Might be 3 or 4 guys that don't know that DeMar's shot fakes at the end of every dribble, right? We got to stay on a shot fake. I mean, it is remarkable. They don't watch the game. There's people in my profession now that don't watch the game, by the way.
Right. Yeah, that's obvious. Yeah, that's obvious.
Which it's frustrating. I have to bring this up tomorrow. I have to bring this up. I just want to go back to those game winners. And let's acknowledge that both those game winners were three pointers.
Yeah.
Let's also acknowledge you shot 35%.
Yeah.
On 1.9 attempts per game.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had you on last time, I think the word you used was, I'm a contrarian. That's why I shoot so many mid-range shots. And obviously it's effective. You shot the most mid-range shots in the league this year. You shot 47% from mid-range, which is, you know, it's on par with Booker and guy, BI, like guys like that. Are there plans to potentially shoot more threes this year?
For sure. I think this year it wasn't asked of me, which allowed it to happen naturally. You know, I think it had been times where it was brought up to me about you need to do. No, I don't. Now the dickhead, come out of me when you telling me I need to do. No, why? Why do I need to do it? And you know, it makes me, you know, be an asshole and not listen, and prove to you why if I do this, this will work. You know what I mean? This year it was more so like it was always just win the game. You know, and me just being a basketball fan, I always want to play the right way. You know, I'm never just going to shoot shots to shoot them. You know, I don't want to walk away from a game being 7-for-30. You know, I try to be efficient as possible every time I go out there and play. And with that, you got the outcome you got this year. You know, I took what was given to me. I didn't force anything. So I think for sure it'd definitely be more this upcoming season.
With your team, with the Bulls, tactically, I said this a few times this year, but you essentially function as the point guard in the half court. Would you say that's true?
Yeah,
because Zach can obviously play make, but he's a scorer, and Zoe primarily actually plays off the ball. And when he is functioning as a point guard, a lot of times it's in transition with his throw ahead passes. That development into a primary playmaker, not just a primary scorer in the half court. Did your years in San Antonio have something to do with that?
For sure. No question. I remember one of our first shoot-arounds with Pop. I forgot what we was playing, but Pop, we were going through shoot-around, and Pop, out of nowhere, just said, DeMar's the point guard. And I said, I was like, what do you mean I'm the point guard? Like, say you... He's the point guard. And from then on, I was the point guard for probably 2 months straight. And it forced me, and Pop is real big on turnovers. You better not turn the ball over or you're going to get cussed out. So it made me more conscious of understanding the right play, understanding who I'm on the floor with, what they can and cannot do, where they like to catch the ball, where they need the ball. And it kind of broke the game down for me in a simpler manner to understand, you know, my passing lanes, how to get guys the ball. And over my first year in San Antonio, I got more and more comfortable with it. And it just carried on from there.
We hype Zach up a lot on the show. Did you realize before you play with him how like skilled he actually is?
Yeah, that was one thing that was big for me. Wanting to play with Zach, because Zach is one of those guys to where he don't get his just due like I believe he should. He's top 5, top 10 talent in our league with the things he's able to do. It's nothing he cannot do. Athletically, he's one of the best athletes in our league. He can shoot the ball from anywhere, get to the basket. It's everything he could do in it. And when you look at it and you realize, like, damn, this year was his first year getting to the playoffs, you know, and you know, you got to give him credit, you know, for the last couple of years, you know, he wasn't on the greatest of teams. So I was a big advocate on just wanting to see him be successful and get the recognition that he deserved, because the talent that he have, the things I've seen him do in practice while we were scrimmaging in the games, it's incredible. I tell him all the time, I'm envious of so much stuff he's able to do because he make it look so easy, you know, and me just being able to give him whatever knowledge I can to, you know, expand his game even more and more. It's just an honor to be able to play with him.
That was going to be my comment on Zach. I was not going to use the word envy. I was going to use the word jealousy to describe how I feel about Zach, because even like his jump shot, man,
just everything.
It just looks, it just looks so easy.
Smooth.
Just it looks so effortless.
Yeah, it's everything you do. And sometimes I find myself, and when we in practice and you do certain things, I sit there and just watch him, because it's like, it makes no sense, the God-gifted abilities that he has. Like, you can't teach what he has.
Do you think he could still win the dunk contest?
No question. Yes. Yes. Easy.
What did you learn playing playoff Giannis?
What I learned playoff Giannis? In comparison, you know, being in the East for so long before I went to San Antonio playing against Giannis and seeing the development to where he is now, it's incredible. It's remarkable the effort that you see he put in to want to be great. It's something that, as a basketball fan and a spectator, I look at like a guy like Giannis, or if I'm someone else who's trying to make it, let me see how dedicated he was. Because I remember when he first came to the league, he was just a skinny kid. You would push him around.
Didn't really know how to play basketball.
Didn't know how to play basketball.
But there was something there.
It was something there. But a lot of people have something there. That don't necessarily mean they find it. For him, you could tell the dedication and how bad he wanted. Even to this day, you could just see how bad he wants it. You could see it physically, his demeanor. When he go out there on the court, he's a fucking killer. Every time. And as a fan, as a basketball fan, you got to respect that. And, you know, being able to compete against him this year, you know, you see why he MVP, one of the most dominant players in our league, without a doubt.
He's the hardest player I've ever seen in the skills competition.
But like, that's
he just like has no turnoff
he
button.
Does everything extremely one way.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With Giannis and obviously the Bucks winning a championship two seasons ago, uncertainty about the Nets and what's going to happen with KD and Kyrie. Boston, on paper at least, probably got a little better. You know, Philly brought back James and I think got better with PJ and D'Anthony Melton. I really like their team. Like for you and Cavs, if they're healthy this year, they could make another jump even more so than they did last year. So for you guys, we had Alex on earlier this summer and he said basically health. That's all it is, as simple as that. But I'm curious from your perspective, because you've obviously been in this league a long time and you understand someone like Giannis and whether it's Kevin or Tatum or whoever, how difficult it is to beat these players in the playoffs. Like, what is it for you guys besides health for you to be able to be a contender in the East?
Besides health, I think going through what we went through last year, experience is the best teacher, in my opinion. And the experience we had to go through last year was a testament of us having to understand how hard it is to win, you know, and go play meaningful basketball after April, not just one round. You know, it's hard. You know, I remember a couple of young guys on the team was like, shit, this is hard. Yeah.
It's different
now,
than regular
now
season.
You know how hard you have to compete every single night because these teams here, they got the experience, they got the talent, they got they got everything down the line. So with that, you got to look yourself in the mirror like, all right, we got the experience. We know what it was like to get to this point. Now it's on everybody individually to take that next step of, you know, locking in when it's time to go to work, whether if it's film, understanding how to play basketball the right way, understanding the mistakes that cost us games last year, what happened when we hit the wall. Damn, if, you know, everybody going to go through health. Nobody, once training camp start, that's the healthiest you're going to be for the whole season. You know, so with that, what can you do to be the best version of you that's asked for this team to be the best that we could be? And I think more guys understand that going into this season. Now it's just about how quickly we could put it together and sustain it.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you that there's got to be health. There's got to be sort of internal development. You know, more court time together means more forging those bonds, yeah, those chemistries, and those experiences together. And we just talked about Kevin and sort of the uncertainty around him. And by the time this airs, who the fuck knows? But there has been a lot of backlash about that trade request that he made. Because he's under contract and he signed his extension. You were part of one of the coldest team-oriented trades, mm-hmm, that I can remember, mm-hmm, when Masai traded you to the Spurs and obviously brought back Kawhi. And I'm curious about your sort of perspective about players taking more ownership of their career and also the backlash that comes with that.
Right. I think the times has changed so much in terms of, you know, guys are more comfortable if they feel a certain way expressing themselves. And I think everybody is completely different. And if that's you, if your happiness is more important than the backlash, go for it. You know, I when I see guys ask for trades or do certain things, I just give it a second and let it play out, because at the end of the day, we don't know how that one person feel. You know what I mean? We could speculate and say, oh, it's bad, he just signed his deal. But internally, that's his business with the team. He the one got to go to work every single day. We don't know what transpired or how it transpired. This sounds like a real fucking politically correct answer that I'm giving, but I really believe that. Like, I just believe, like...
Well, so I think part of this is rings culture and, yeah, social media. I'm almost positive a tandem like John Stockton and Karl Malone would not have played together for as long as they did without getting over the hump.
True.
And you can go back in history, like teams make trades and all that, like in the 80s and 90s. But the experience that we've had,
yeah,
and the pressure on players and the narrative around them, yeah, specifically as it relates to rings and winning, I think it's different now.
Yeah.
I think it's different now. And so I think some of the player reaction to a lack of success, like, you know, championship, I think some of that is based on that.
Yeah.
No, and whether we can individually admit that or not, yeah, like, yeah, I think some of it is that.
Yeah, for sure. But then you'll find someone like Dane, where it'd be like, I'm staying here, when you got the whole world saying, you need to ask for a trade, you need to... You know what I mean? So it all depends on a person. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at, because, you know, everyone is different. You know, everyone is different. You know, I was the type of guy to where if I never got traded, it was like, I was always big on, you know, I look at players like Kobe, Dirk, Tim, guys who play for one franchise. Like, when I came in the league, I want to play with one team and one team only. That'll mean everything to me. That was me. You know what I mean? Like, now, would I sit up here and ask for a trade? This, I've never been in that position to say, hey, trade me. Hey, trade me. I could have felt the way for 3 years in San Antonio. You never heard anything about, oh, DeMar's unhappy. He's demanding a trade. Are you want to play? But that's
you.
Me.
That's you, the
that's
individual.
Me, you know yeah. what I mean? So when I see other guys ask for trades, it may be a lot of other guys out there that's top tier players that want to trade, but they're not going to ask for it. You know, so it all varies to the person, to how you feel and how you value yourself and what you're willing to go through and accept with it. So that's just how I look at it.
Yeah, no, that's very politically correct.
Yeah.
It's very politically correct.
I have a completely separate question. I was watching the video of from 2016 of you. It was you, Jimmy, and Kyrie on the plane, Team USA.
Yeah.
And you're singing and Melo's getting pissed. Uh-huh. Melo's like looking over you. Is there any like backstory? I don't know if you've talked about this before. Is there any backstory to that? And then also like what else from that trip you remember that you really enjoyed?
We played so much during the Olympic team. Like I was in my phone a couple of weeks ago and I found so many other videos that that would go viral that we didn't post. And I'm pretty sure everybody else do. But it was the story to that, it was an early morning and I forgot what we was flying to. We was leaving Vegas. We was leaving from somewhere. It was early morning. Everybody was tired and somebody just got to playing music and we was just trying to irritate whoever we could irritate, honestly. Like, but that was us every single day. Like we joked every single day, all night, the whole time we was together, you know, and that was just one of those moments that we put out there, but I'm pretty sure we got plenty of other moments that somebody could share that was on that team.
My big takeaway from this interview is that DeMar DeRozan is sitting on a treasure trove of viral content.
Oh yeah, no.
When this show comes out,
listen, like, no question.
That's going to be the headline on Clutch Points.
If I was more outgoing, I would share more. But you know,
save that for the documentary.
Yeah, I'll save it.
My last question for you, DeMar. We talked about this with you 2 years ago when you're on the show, and you've been such an incredible advocate for mental health and. I talk about my own experiences with therapy on the show all the time. And I just wanted to ask you about your tweet recently, which was, man, this one of them nights I've been having good days, then I'd be having bad days where it just hit me like a ton of bricks, stay focused. And, you know, for someone who has, feels the same way very often and has dealt with, some anxiety and depression and whatnot, how brave it is that you've done that. And since you sort of became sort of an advocate, a public advocate, an outspoken, Kevin Love is another great example of that in the league. How has your sort of process matured with your own sort of pursuit of mental health?
I think for me, just understanding that it's a journey and not necessarily a destination. You know, growing up, always looked at, well, ever since I was an adult, I always looked at things like I need to get to this destination for me to be happy instead of understanding, you know, everything we go through is a journey. And as the journey go on, you got to accept what comes with it and understand how to grow from it and be a better person from it. Because, you know, it's no destination to just being happy. You know, even with me accepting therapy, it's not, you know, at first, when I accepted, I looked at it like, I'm going to go to therapy and I'll be fine in probably like 10 sessions. And it don't work like that. You know, it don't work like that. It's a journey that goes into it. So for me, it just helped me understand that it's a journey. And even part of me putting out that tweet was for other people to understand, like, you know, you could get caught up all day and pick up your phone and see the nicest places, see everybody post the best looking pictures of them. The funnest day they had. You can get lost in seeing what's not real and letting that affect you. And I think for me, even me putting that, tweeting that the other night, it was more so like, yo, I'm going through some shit too, but you got to stay focused. Like you're not alone in it.
I think what makes it particularly powerful for me, what you've done, and even this something as simple as that tweet, is the perception of professional athletes that because we've made it and because we have a lot of money. The assumption is that we have a disposal of beautiful women and cars and houses and jewelry, whatever. It's like we are supposed to be happy all the time.
Exactly.
And it's particularly dehumanizing to me. And that's why I just have a great amount of respect for you. And, you know, you mentioned sort of what you have sort of dealt with there. But, you know, for me, it was like, it's always been about not beating myself up.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And it, particularly as I've gotten older, and even this year of retirement, like, shit, man, I haven't worked out in a year.
Right,
if I had gone 2 days as a player without working out, I would have this overwhelming sense of anxiety and guilt. And if I didn't have a great shooting workout, I have to go back. It's like, and so this year, like, I really focused on, like, not being so hard on myself.
Yeah.
And it was really, like, actually a beautiful thing. So I just want to share that with you, man. I appreciate it.
That's great insight, because I don't think a lot of people understand that, because we put so much into this.
Internal pressure.
Yes.
On ourselves.
And it's so easy to get caught up into it. You know what I mean? That's why I always talk to a lot of older guys now that's retired, and just always ask them, like, you know, how's everything? You know what I mean? Because what's crazy, I don't think I never said this. Like, for me, I don't think I could truly be happy until I retire. And I say that because of what you just said, because it's so much internal pressure to want to be great every single day. Every single day of, like, I got to go back to the gym. I didn't do enough. I didn't this. Should I take the day off? No. I'm gonna just push through it. You know, and it's you carry that so much to where you can't really fully be happy until you walk away from it.
Well, you carry it in season, like the emotional roller coaster of the season. You carry it game to game, the highs and the lows, particularly the lows. And you might have 2 or 3 games in a row. Now all of a sudden you're looking at 7, 8 days of the lows. And unfortunately, if you're wired a certain way, there's no relief from that. Mm. And then you may have a devastating loss in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now you've got to fucking carry that for 3.5 months in the season. And I will say, there are so many things that I miss in terms of the joy in my life. Like, yeah, I have more joy in my life. I have a day-to-day general happiness that's better now.
Mm.
That's not to say I don't miss the competition. Actually, this morning, I had to call and sign up for the, you know, we get health benefits a year out. So I had to pay Cobra for a year.
Yeah.
But now that I'm a year out, I had to sign up by the end of the month for my medical benefits. And I'm literally on the phone with the lady and I started crying. I called my wife. I'm like, I have no idea why I'm being emotional. Like, the fucking chapter ended a long time ago. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I guess it was just that reminder of, like, nah, man, you're really fucking done.
Yeah,
like,
you're done. Wow. Yeah.
Anyways, DeMar, we appreciate the time, man. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all.
If you like The Old Man of the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Yo, Trey.
Kevin, what's up, man?
You know, I've been thinking, what would have happened if the NBA never vetoes the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers and we get CP3 in the same backcourt as Kobe in LA?
Well, you get a very happy Jack Nicholson, for sure.
And the Lakers probably win a bunch more championships. CP3 finally gets a ring or two or three, and the Kardashian empire is forever altered.
What did you just say? Hey, everybody, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier, and we're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.